My name is Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Sarah Krajewski. She's the iCults Curator of Modern and Contemporary Art at the Portland Art Museum. And she's here today to talk about Frida Kahlo, Diego Rivera, and Mexican Modernism, which opens February 19th and runs through June 5th. Thank you so much for doing Art Focus again, Sarah.
Well, it's great to be here. I'm really excited for folks to see this exhibition, and it is a very highly anticipated one.
Exactly, yeah. Frida Kahlo, Diego Rivera, and Mexican Modernism. So we've had a Frida opera, we've had a Frida stage play at Center Stage. Now we finally get the paintings that have been like backed up in a warehouse or somewhere for a year. It's not just a Frida Kahlo show, it's bigger than that.
Right, yeah. This exhibition, Frida Kahlo, Diego Rivera, and Mexican Modernism from the Jacques and Natasha Gelman collection is really a wonderful overview of this very important moment in Mexican art history, coming out of the revolution. A civil war ended in 1920, and a real Mexican cultural renaissance took place with an exploration of what it means to be a Mexican citizen in this newly established constitutional republic. And artists were really at the center of creating this kind of visual language and visual identity, what's often now called Mexicanidad or Mexicanness. And they treated the unique aspects of rural and agrarian life, indigenous cultures, and the land, traditions of home and family in their work. So as modernist artists, they were very concerned about what it means to make a truly modern art, but one that's also unique to Mexico and its people. And I'll say this, the Jacques and Natasha Gelman collection is, I think they consider it a national treasure of Mexico because it is so strong in the work of Diego Rivera and Frida Kahlo, you know, these internationally beloved artists. And it's actually been traveling the country, hitting different venues, and we were delayed because of COVID, but we're really happy to bring the works to Portland.
Well, you've broken the exhibition into a series of parts, right? So let's just look at a few of those. One heading you've looked at is land. So what was right. Talk about, you know, the Mexicans had a revolution, they sort of went back to a sort of collectivized land ownership. Is that an oversimplification?
Well, one of the catalysts for the Mexican Revolution was land reform. And prior to 1910, at the start of the revolution, land was held by the elite and by foreign interests, and agrarian and indigenous people were exploited in their roles working the land and in rural communities. So coming out of the revolution, politicians worked to redistribute land and resources. And so how the artists engaged with that was really to focus on these unique characteristics of the Mexican landscape and as part of this ideology of Mexicanidad or Mexicanness. So for instance, we have a wonderful painting by Diego Rivera called Landscape with Cacti, where he's depicted an arid landscape with multiple cactuses populating that landscape. It was a political gesture to identify this unique plant. If you call to mind the Mexican flag, features a cactus very prominently. And to put forward that unique characteristic of the landscape, an element that is shared across the populations of Mexico.
The painting of the cacti, it's sort of cartoonish. So, you know, it's got a green sky with some cacti in the background, but the main three cacti, they kind of look like those waving men you see outside a car dealership that
laugh around. Yeah.
And their arms are going, and then one of them looks like a woman. She's got breasts. Is he being surrealist? Is he being Dali-like? Or what's going on here?
Yeah, so thank you for describing that a little bit more. Certainly, Rivera, like the Mexican modernists, other Mexican modernist artists, incorporated aspects of their life into their work. And folks often interpret this painting to be that trio of anthropomorphized cacti to be Rivera, Frida Kahlo, his wife, and Nicolas Mirai, an artist who was also one of Frida Kahlo's lovers. So there's a bit of a triangulation, a love triangle there in the center of that piece. But I think one thing that's really unique to Rivera is how often he brought his own personal experience and his life into his work, even when he was making an allegorical painting, you know, such as this one, which touches upon the Mexican landscape as a place of shared experiences. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite works in the exhibition is also included in this section, and it's Frida Kahlo's Self-Portrait with Monkey. And in this work, she positions herself in nature. She's surrounded by lush green foliage. A bird of paradise bloom is behind her. And three monkeys, a cohort of monkeys, sit on her shoulder and are featured in the painting. And both Kahlo and Rivera kept an array of pets, including monkeys. And I believe this painting really shows how she positioned herself, you know, in this unique landscape and connecting herself to a kind of continuity of the past, how nature represents and represents not just this country, but a kind of the history of the country of Mexico, and that there's a continuity in its representation. When you come to see the exhibition, you'll notice that she has a red kind of circular emblem at the base of her blouse, which is called a huipil, a kind of a blouse that's typically worn by indigenous and agrarian women. And that circular motif references a glyph called Olin, which is in the Nahuatl language means upheaval or earthquake. So it gives us a hint into her own life, which had many upheavals in her health, in her relationship with Rivera, her work as an artist and as a political activist.
Does the monkey mean anything in particular? She can pose with any kind of animal. You know, she had deer and cats and dogs, and she could pose with other plants too. But what does a monkey mean?
It was her pet, and I think interpret it as a childlike figure for her. She wasn't able to have children, although she desired to be a mother. I think the monkey as a kind of an animal that is native to Mexico, I guess, these small spider monkeys were part, and just connect her to that kind of continuity of both the flora and fauna of Mexico. She did pose with her hairless Mexican dog in photographs that you'll see in the exhibition. One of her pet monkeys' names was Fulang Chang, and he's featured in several photographs in the exhibition. She paints her dog as well. So you see this connection that she has to her animal family members in the exhibition.
There's a great Diego Rivera painting of Natasha Gelman lounging on a velvet couch, and she is in this sort of evening gown, this white hugging gown that's slashed up the front, showing off her legs and her painted nails. She's got a bunch of blingy jewelry on. It's actually a very tasteful dress with a lot of silver jewelry and diamonds. And then behind her, there are two giant bunches of white lilies. So who are the Gelmans? And, you know, if you're a couple of communist painters, what's your relationship with your patrons?
Yeah, that is a really great question. So first, let me tell you a little bit about the Gelmans. Jacques and Natasha Gelman emigrated to Mexico City from Eastern Europe just before World War II. After the Mexican Revolution, Mexico City became, it drew a lot of international artists and arts patrons and thinkers and musicians, poets. And Jacques Gilman was a film producer. So he was really key to this burgeoning film industry in Mexico City. And through the success of that of his work, he and Natasha, his wife, were able to commission and collect the work of the foremost Mexican modernist artists, and including Diego Rivera and Frida Kahlo. So hence the collection that's on view is all work that they put together during their lifetime of support of the artists. This painting by Rivera, I think, is really, it's very beautiful and shows Natasha, you know, as this elegant woman, almost maybe one of us, of the starlets that might have been featured in one of Jacques Gelman's films. It's very suggestive and sexualized. The calla lilies that do mimic that dress that you beautifully described are quite voluptuous and suggestive. It's interesting because the calla lilies are a motif that Rivera painted frequently. And in another work in the exhibition, The Calla Lily Vendor, we see a very different take on the meaning of these blooms. So in the portrait of Natasha, we see really immense bouquet of flowers decorating her very elegant home. In The Calla Lily Vendor, we see a profusion of the calla lilies taking up the canvas, placed in a basket with two women kneeling in front of the basket, almost dwarfed by the size of these flowers and the weight of that basket that they need to lift to sell. Their clothing indicates that they're women from the countryside. They wear rebosos, or shawls that are common for indigenous women. They have braided hair and bare feet. So this painting is often interpreted through a political lens, that this beautiful commodity of the calla lily flowers becomes a burden for the lower class, the peasant folk who support the lifestyles of these rich urban dwellers. So I love that these two paintings will be provide this kind of dialogue. And I think that dialogue is a really interesting one, considering Rivera and Kahlo's lives. They were members of the Mexican Communist Party. Rivera, of course, was very instrumental in the mural movement, creating historical views of historical events and allegories in support of the new progressive government's agenda. However, he did kind of run into some conflict with other members of the Mexican Communist Party, because he, you know, was a part of these maybe more elite circles like the Gelmans, and creating easel paintings that could be collected. Another artist featured in the exhibition, David Alfaro Siqueiros, who was another one of the important muralists in Mexico City, he and others would call out Rivera for that activity and not being a radical enough communist. And he was ousted from the party at a certain point. So there was that tension, you know, and he was also commissioned by American capitalists like David Rockefeller to make a mural at Rockefeller Center. But in that case, because of the communist imagery that he included in the mural, including a portrait of Lenin, that mural was destroyed. My take on it is this kind of very fluid relationship between the proletariat and artists at the time really felt that they were workers, just like the agrarian and industrial workers. They occupied that same role as a laborer, but also kind of participating in these elite circles with art collectors and art patrons, and advancing their work in this more rarefied sphere.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Sarah Krajewski. She's the curator of modern and contemporary art at the Portland Art Museum. And she's talking about Frida Kahlo, Diego Rivera, and Mexican modernism, which runs February 19th through June 5th. at the Portland Art Museum?
The exhibition certainly centers on Diego Rivera and Frida Kahlo as key members of this Mexican modernist cultural renaissance, but there are many artists included who flesh out the story of artistic innovations, of political activities. We have wonderful photographs by Manuel Alvarez Bravo and Lola Alvarez Bravo that speak to the importance of modernist photography in the country at the time, as well as paintings by artists like Rufino Tamayo, Maria Izquierdo, Juan Soriano, and others that show how broad and all of the themes of the exhibition, how broadly they impacted the work of artists in Mexico and Mexico City from 1920 to about 1950. So really, I think, an important exhibition that sheds, that shines a light on some of the most exciting and important work of the first half of the 20th century internationally.
There's a section called Creating Frida, which is, it's all about, you know, her kind of personal brand and how careful she was in the symbols she chose when she painted herself. Could you just talk a little bit about that? Because I didn't realize she was quite into like haute couture, as well as, you know, mixing Spanish influenced dress with garments worn by indigenous women.
The section called Creating Frida is filled with photographs of her. She was very aware of how to present herself in front of the camera. Her father, Guillermo Kahlo, was a photographer, and she worked in his portrait studio as a young girl. So she became very aware of, you know, how to present oneself to the camera. And this section has a wonderful timeline from 1929 all the way up to the early 50s, where we see the evolution of her public persona, her brand, as you described it. And I think if she were alive today, she would certainly be utilizing social media to promote herself and her beliefs. She did adopt a style of clothing that is connected to this notion of Mexicanidad that I described earlier, that there was an ideology around being and identifying oneself as Mexican, and mm-hmm. to do that for Kahlo was to take on the garments that indigenous and women from the countryside would wear, or mestiza women would wear. So
there's one called Frida on Bench number 5, and she's wearing a black skirt that's spread out, so you can see this red and yellow kind of zigzag border around the hem, and she has, I think, a black shawl and then a red and yellow blouse with a black chest piece, and then a huge gold chain, gold pendants, and then flowers in her hair, earrings, and she's sitting against this green backdrop with, again, I think they're the same pink flowers on this fabric background. And she's also on a bench which has like white molded metal in the shape of, I think, grapes and vines. So she's cramming a lot into this picture. It's so symmetric, and she's staring right at the camera. It's a really amazing photo. You think quickly what the occasion was? What's she doing on the bench?
Sure, this photograph was taken by Nicholas Marai, who was a fashion photographer and portrait photographer. He was also one of her lovers. And he took photographs of her for Vogue magazine. And from my research, has shown that she was one of the first Mexican women to be presented in the fashion magazine. I think her choice of clothing is very specific, as I started to describe. It was her way of acknowledging how women dressed in across the country of Mexico. She would often select pieces of garments from a particular region called Tehuantepec in Oaxaca. Her mother's ancestors came from that region, and the very distinctive clothing there would have been recognizable to her, to Kahlo's contemporaries. I think, you know, for Kahlo, her father was German and his family had immigrated to Mexico. Her mother was Mexican with indigenous background. So she really embraced this blending of cultures as we see represented in her choice of clothing. I think today we might think of this as almost a kind of cultural appropriation, but at her time, it would have been a very political statement to be blending these traditional types of garments like the shawls or the huipil blouses or full-length skirts, the hair pieces, with pieces that reflected her European heritage, like you mentioned, the jewelry or haute couture. So she was very specific in using her clothing to communicate who she was. I hope when folks come to see the exhibition and see this section, even in her paintings, but in all of these photographs, she's directly gazing out and confronting us by looking right into the camera. So I think she was a very canny use of her own image to present herself in a very specific way and expressing her political beliefs. And, you know, I don't know if she would have considered herself a feminist, but certainly today a lot of people do consider her to be an early feminist artist.
The photo and the other one of her in a red rebozo, where she has a purple headdress, they're both so, they both haven't changed at all. They're perfectly clear. The color's perfect. The focus. You know, so much art becomes sort of faded and dusted. Even the modernist paintings kind of looking a bit grim these days. But these photos stand out like they could have been taken yesterday. They're so exactly how we see the world today, which is an amazing feeling.
Yeah, I think she was you know, very, very unique in the way she, you know, presented herself, how she understood the camera and photographs to be a tool for communicating who she was, perhaps ahead of her time. Or it's just, I think, also part of how her image has continued to circulate. She's highly recognizable. Her facial features, her clothing, you know, you see it in all kinds of marketing and mm-hmm. all kinds of products. And, you know, I think we might call that kind of Frida mania. And so what I'm hoping this exhibition will do is present Frida who she was, not just this icon that's been kind of co-opted today. She does feel very familiar to us because of the way her image has circulated. So through the photo, there's many photographs in the exhibition, but also through her self-portrait paintings, I hope visitors will take away a real sense of who this person was, you know, even if she was posing for the camera and posing in specific ways. I think the exhibition and the context of Mexican modernism and all of her peers surrounding her will help flesh out that story of who she was.
A section called Home and Family has a painting in it by another Rivera, actually, and it's two boys playing with dolls. One of the dolls' legs has come off, and in the background, there's a huge vase, must be a vase, of gigantic sunflowers sort of bearing down on them. And the boys also have masks. One's a bird mask and one is some kind of white theatrical mask. What was the significance of the dolls here?
Yeah, I think for Frida Kahlo and Diego Rivera, the home and family were became important subject matter for them, and they had a troubled marriage, or I don't know if we would call it maybe an open marriage today. They were not monogamous. They had lovers. They were together. They separated and divorced and remarried. And through this all, you know, Rivera had children from previous marriages, and Kahlo was unable to bear children because of health conditions suffered through a terrible bus accident that crushed her pelvis and spine. So I think oftentimes when we see dolls and children represented in both Rivera and Kahlo's paintings, you know, it references back to this notion of the family, and maybe a more troubled notion of the two not, you know, having a kind of unconventional and childless marriage, which, you know, at the time for Kahlo, I'm sure felt a lot of pressure to be that dutiful Mexican wife and mother, something that she, you know, really felt at odds with her desire to also be an artist. And other works in the exhibition explore that. So I wonder if that doll with the broken leg kind of refers back to this kind of, this part of their relationship. It's a beautiful painting. And he painted a lot. Rivera painted many children, whether they were members of his household staffs, families, or others that surrounded him. He had a very wonderful way of capturing children. And again, it has to harken back to this idea of Mexicanidad, that setting, domestic settings, the home environment could communicate quite a bit about the traditional Mexican home through furnishings, through the flowers, through the clothing that everybody wore.
It's so, Frida grew up and lived in her family home, right? And in those Mexico City suburbs, the Blue House, and that became a museum. But at the time, it was kind of a boho house, right? People would come over, artists and you know, thinkers would be around there. That, you know, that's just a different version of the home. If you don't have kids, maybe you collect a bunch of artists.
Yeah, I think the sense of community that could be built in their artistic circles as well as their political circles really does play out in their home, in her home, the Blue House. And they had multiple homes in Mexico City. But, you know, I like to think of, you know, maybe this place where she grew up and she lived for many years, where she could invite her peers. Leon Trotsky and his wife lived there while they were in exile, you know, that she could really live her life there as an artist, as a bisexual woman, as an independent woman. And, you know, that became this kind of special environment for her.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Sarah Krajewski. She's the iColts Curator of Modern and Contemporary Art at the Portland Art Museum. And she was talking about Frida Kahlo, Diego Rivera, and Mexican Modernism, which opens February 19th and runs through June the 5th. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus again, Sarah. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure, Joseph. And I look forward to welcoming folks to the museum to see this excellent show.
Andy, whoa, whoa, look, so scream. Add him on my wall. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver scream. Can't tell them apart at all.
Ah. escuchando KBO.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes 15 de febrero del 2022. A partir del 1 de marzo, la provincia de Ontario ya no requerirá que las personas muestren un comprobante de vacunación para ingresar a espacios interiores, anunció el primer ministro Doug Ford el lunes por la mañana. En una llamada con los periodistas, el señor Ford dijo que el cambio en la política pública para rescindir el llamado pase de la vacuna se basó en la disminución del número de casos de coronavirus y hospitalizaciones y no fue una concesión a los manifestantes que han acampado en camiones alrededor del Parliament Hill, lo que obstruyó el comercio internacional al bloquear un